Cue the fancy intro music. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and this is Creative Freedom, empowerment for creative entrepreneurs, where can-do inspiration and how-to education collide to help you own your dreams without selling your soul. Creative Freedom helps you end the hustle, define success on your own terms, and build a profitable, sustainable business doing more of what you love and less of what you don't. I'm so excited you're here with me today. Let's get started. This week, I took my first ever trip to the Big Easy, New Orleans. NOLA, baby. My sister and I traveled together from Nashville to commemorate my dad's centennial birthday. He would have been 100 had he lived this long. He got 80 good years in. And we thought this would be a good opportunity to go there because neither of us had ever been to Louisiana before. And it was the perfect setup. I mean, we drove down, we spent the morning of his birthday visiting sites in Opelousas where he was born. And I say that, and there aren't a whole lot of sites to see in Opelousas, but we didn't have a lot of time anyways. And we spent the afternoon taking in NOLA. And it was great to finally get some history on a man who's pretty much been a mystery to both of us. We got a private tour of the church where Dad was baptized. And of course, we had to stop at Café du Monde for a beignet and café au lait. And there are pictures on social from the trip. So if you're curious, be sure to check those out. Oh, and as we wind down season 5, this is probably a good time to mention that this season's episodes are being recorded out of order. I'm traveling a lot. And I'm recording what's ready as I go. So I'm tackling a lot of questions and ideas this season, and I wanted to put them in a logical listening order, but just like television, that doesn't mean I'll be recording them in the same order that they air because I want to keep it logical for you, and I'm just shooting it as I go. Speaking of tackling a lot of ideas, I talked to too many creative entrepreneurs who express the same fear and frustration. I've got too many ideas and I can't figure out which ones to pursue first. And to top it all off, I'm worried that I'm going to forget them or someone else is going to steal them before I have a chance to get them out of my head and into the world. Yeah, even yours truly has struggled with this from time to time. The nature of creative entrepreneurship is that we're creating. And sometimes it feels like we're always creating. Infusion creatives like me are creating all over the map. I'm a performing artist, an author, a speaker. I write instrumental and vocal music. I dance and I act. I'm appearing in a reality TV show this fall. And then there's the coaching, the consulting, and the training that I do through my company, Arc Entertainment Media. So yeah, lots of ideas. How do we manage them all? Can they even be managed? Well, there are multiple facets to this problem. First, there's the logistical issue of downloading all these ideas and tracking them without letting them slip through your fingers. Second is the mindset issue. You've got so many ideas that are then coupled with a fear that's rooted in scarcity. I might not have another one. And then discerning which ideas are meant for you and which ones are for someone else to implement. Because let's be clear here, not every great idea you have is meant for you. And then lastly, deciding which of your ideas you'll move on now and which ones you should put on hold for later. Well, today you're in luck because I'm going to help you navigate all that good stuff. And especially if you're a chaotic creative that struggles to keep all this organized, I'm also going to share a free tool that I've been using for years to help me keep every idea safely stored for future use. So let's dig in and let's tackle the easiest piece first. How do we keep track of all these great ideas? Well, paper and pen has been my go-to most of my life. I've been a journaler for decades, and I have stacks of notebooks that I've been lugging around because I've got these little gems that are buried inside it. But here's the problem with that. It's cumbersome, not to mention heavy. And then I still have to schedule time to go back and sift through these notebooks to cull them down and find my great ideas. Now, that's not a great ROI, but it's basic, it's portable, and it gets the job done. But about 10 years ago, I found the dream catcher. It's basically a digital idea collector or a mental lockbox that saved me countless hours of trying to remember and find my ideas. And because they're all in one place, securely saved and locked away, I never worry about forgetting or losing them. It was created by the author of Symbolology and a former client of mine, Mark Joyner. It's so effective that I've been using the digital version of this dream catcher for more than 10 years now. You can schedule reminders that bring your ideas back to you, which is pretty groovy when you think about it. Say you've got a great idea for an offer you want to try, but it's just not in the cards this quarter. Well, you can schedule a reminder for the end of the quarter to come back and review it automatically. And if it's still not time, you can schedule it out again. I've got some ideas in my dream catcher that date back to when I first started using it in 2010 because the time's just not right for it yet, or I haven't found the right person to give it to, which we'll talk more about in a bit. Something that kind of splits the difference between these two ideas is this reusable notebook that I've seen called Rocketbook. I haven't had a chance to use it yet, but it sounds pretty useful. It looks kind of sexy. I'm kind of curious about it. Taking notes in a reusable notebook eliminates waste. While you still get that tactile sensation of writing by hand, I really enjoy writing by hand. And you don't have to lug around a ton of old papers like I still do. Plus, you can digitize your notes and store them in the cloud so that they're searchable, which is really sexy to me. Being able to search your notes for specific things is really sexy. And that's something that the Dreamcatcher doesn't do. I like the reminders and the texting abilities inside the Dreamcatcher, but being able to search stuff and not having to be chained to the internet, that actually sounds appealing to me, especially because I still like to write by hand. And this is a way to kind of capture handwriting without having to type everything out or put it all up in, you know, on the internet or something. So there's pros and cons to both these options. I've got Rocketbook on my Amazon wish list for all of you curious people out there. And if I get one, I will come back and let you know how it works. But, you know, there are other ways too. I've seen people use voice recorders or create private blog posts on their WordPress site to store their ideas, and nobody else can see them except them. They log in, and their private posts are all there for them to review at any time. But the point here is that you don't have to keep it all locked up in your head and then just hope that you'll remember it. And you can keep it away from prying eyes, too. So that helps you get the ideas out of your head. But then what? Remember, I said there are multiple facets to this issue. So let's tackle some of that mindset piece next. You're going to hear me say this a lot. The mindset is more important than the mastery. Let me say it again. The mindset is more important than the mastery. It's a concept I sort of understood intuitively for years after I had first heard the phrase, but I had it laid out for me very clearly by Dr. George Huang when I interviewed him for my book, Creative Freedom. He's a former physician turned business coach, and Dr. Huang sat down to chat with me about the mindset blocks that make it hard for a creative entrepreneur to make the leap from zero to five-figure months. But this mindset piece applies to a lot of different things, right? So in my research, by far, the hardest leap is from zero to $5,000 months. The leap from 5K to 10K months often happens exponentially faster for creative entrepreneurs, due in part to increased confidence and clarity about your business. But when we sat down to discuss why, Dr. Huang explained that many times, the mindset is more important than the mechanics when you're just starting out. Because in addition to the basic fundamentals of starting a business, like setting up your business structures, developing an offer, testing your market, there are a lot of emotional hurdles most of us struggle to overcome to move into higher income brackets. According to Dr. Huang, quote, "There's this mindset piece, which I personally and professionally think is the bigger deal. I think the common theme is I'm not good enough. I'm not worthy. I'm not deserving. I'm a fake. In my head, I know I should be making more money, but in my heart, I'm afraid that people won't pay it and I'll be rejected. I'll be alone and abandoned," end quote. Dr. Huang's thoughts confirmed my own experiences with clients, particularly those on the chaotic end of the spectrum. Remember, chaotic creatives set incredibly high standards, making it almost impossible for even the best of us to achieve and maintain them when you're short on resources like most typical startups. Add to that their nature to trust their instincts and give more weight to what they're feeling, and they can often find themselves on an emotional roller coaster that leaves them stuck in a place where they can't grow beyond their current reality. So if the mindset is more important than the mastery, let's give you some tools to help you move through those mindset challenges and get you to profitability faster. One of the big issues I see tripping up creative entrepreneurs of all stripes is the old "I'm not worthy" saw. Now, I've seen Denzel Washington give a speech, and I'll link to it in the show notes, where he talks about your inherent worthiness. You're worthy of greatness because you're on the planet sucking air. I'm sure a lot of people would fight me on that, but I believe that every one of us has a voice that deserves to be heard. I believe that every one of us deserves to be truly seen for who we are, and I deeply believe that every single one of us has at least one gift that this world needs. So Denzel's quote, "True desire in the heart for anything good is God's proof to you, sent beforehand to indicate that it's yours already. True desire in the heart, that itch that you have, whatever it is that you want to do, that thing that you want to do to help others and to grow and to make money, that desire, that itch, that's God's proof to you, sent beforehand, already to indicate that it's yours," end quote. Religious beliefs aside, that's the juice right there. Now, for the religious, Denzel's saying, name it, claim it, and do the work because it's already yours. But Denzel's also saying, have the courage to own what's true for you, to claim it and go after it because it matters, because you matter. If you don't have faith in your dreams, goals, and ideas, why the heck are you considering them in the first place? Why would anyone else care about them if you don't have a burning desire inside yourself to bring them to reality? And yeah, I hear you skeptics out there. Well, I wanted to be an astronaut and fly to Mars, but I'm 90 and I'm fat. I'm never going to be an astronaut. Or I wanted to be an NBA superstar, but I blew up my knee in college and I can't play ball anymore. So okay, skeptics, this one's for you. First, be willing to let go of the right fighting. Let go of needing to be right all the time. Yeah, you're right. That dream in that specific iteration may have passed you by. But did you give up completely, or did you try to shift your approach? Do you really want to be an astronaut? If so, what have you done? What did you do, or what are you doing to move closer to making that dream a reality? And how does being an NBA superstar help others? Or was that only about your ego? Were there other, perhaps even better ways to impact the world that you blew off because your desire didn't show up exactly the way you wanted it to? Oh, snap! Tough love right there. Yeah, I know. Look, I'm not naive enough to say, ooh, if you name it and claim it, you'll always get what you want. No. I am a true fan of the action part of the law of attraction. You've got to put your rear in gear and do something to bring most of your dreams and goals to fruition. Now, some goals and dreams aren't meant to be fulfilled in the way that we envision them. And I've talked before about dropping the judgment and letting go of the how, or expecting things to always show up the way you think they should. I tell my clients all the time that your goal isn't always the goal. That means that sometimes your goal or dream is a catalyst meant to get you off your butt and start moving. And then as you move, the world, the universe moves too. We don't operate in a vacuum here. You're moving, the universe around you is moving, and you start to see new things with new perspectives. Those new perspectives open your eyes to other things that might be more important or more significant to you. That doesn't mean your original goal or idea was a worthless pipe dream. It served its purpose. You can let it go. I dreamed about being a rock star when I was a kid. And now I do almost everything that I had envisioned as a kid a rock star would do. I perform on stages for thousands of people. I'm on TV. I'm also online, which wasn't even a thing when I was a kid. I write and record music. I've even hung out with other big name celebrities at their Christmas parties. So if I was looking at the checklist that my 10-year-old self created about what it means to be a rock star, I'm a rock star. But I think we can all agree that when Billboard lists the greatest rock stars of all time, my name wouldn't even be in the running for that list today. One of the things about being a creative entrepreneur is that you have to make decisions about what really matters. What's the real focus? How much are you willing to do? What are you willing to put into this idea that you have? And will that be enough to make your idea break through the noise that's already out there? If you're a prolific idea-generating machine, your goals and ideas are going to pile up. You simply don't have the spoons for all of them. So for me, being a mom and caring for my small children took most of the spoons of the last 10 years. So I built slowly. A few ideas are still waiting, like I said, from way back in 2010. But here's what I know. Those things that matter are still on my radar, and I'll either get to them or they won't be important enough to pursue, period. But it's never a question of worthiness. Wait, actually, I take that back. It is a question of worthiness, but not in the way you think. Instead of looking at your ideas, your goals, and dreams and wondering, well, who am I to do this? Or I'm not worthy of that. Flip the script. And I tell you, this idea alone was a big mindset shift for me. I call it the idea interview. Flip your script and ask, why is this idea worthy of me? Why should I put my precious time and energy into this idea right now? That lens has helped me say no to a lot of good ideas to make room for the really great ones to pop. Sir Richard Branson said that business opportunities are like buses. There's always another one coming. Well, ideas are business opportunities in the making. If that's the case, then you need to be strategic about which idea bus you're getting on and how far you're going to ride it. How do you know which idea bus is for you right now and which one is going to make a great ride in the future? This is where I want you to consider how worthy each of your ideas is for your awesome, bodacious self. If each idea were sitting in front of you like a job interview candidate, how would you determine if that idea was a good fit for your company? What questions would you ask in your interview to determine if it's worth it to invest your resources right now in this new idea? When I tripped over this concept, it was a total mindset shift for me. Now, I'm a recovering course junkie. I mean, I actually consume the courses I buy, but I still find myself buying lots of courses, hiring coaches, maxing my budget on things that could have waited or weren't entirely necessary to the health and well-being of my business. And then I implemented this job interview idea. Every idea, every opportunity gets the interview. Now, if I don't have the spoons to do the interview, that tells me right away that it's not as mission critical as I thought it was, and it can wait. And I realized just how precious all my resources are, time, energy, and money. And each idea needs to fit a role in my company now, or I don't do it. So what's the job I'm looking to fill? Is it more income? Is it growing my audience, my reach, my impact? How does this idea fit into that plan? What's the return on resources, the ROR? I've talked about that before. If I make this investment, how long will it reasonably take for me to recoup that investment? And then I add 10% because I know I'm an optimist and a fusion creative who is wired to underestimate timelines. So does it make good business sense right now for me to take this investment, or should I just wait? Following Profit First had me take a hardline look at where I was investing in my business growth to the detriment of myself or my profit. Now that might sound weird, but you can actually cannibalize your profit by continually plowing money back into the business for future growth. A healthy business has both profit and a line item budget for future growth. They are not mutually exclusive. So each idea that you want to pursue needs to have a job, or it's not worthy of my resources for now. And that "for now" is an important distinction because things change. When I launched the Creative Freedom Incubator, I'd been sitting on that idea for decades, but the time was right. I was considering launching a publishing incubator this year, and that didn't pan out. In the idea interview, everything looked good. We had the resources, the know-how, a solid track record of creating results for our clients. But when I researched further and talked to the publishers I knew, the idea started to fall down on the job. Add to that the difficulty that I had finding qualified candidates to test the project, and it died on the vine. For now. I'll probably pick it back up again in the future once we have a few more pieces in place. But for this year, the publishing incubator was a no-go. So the idea interview is one approach that I use to get clear on my big business priorities. Another one that I use for the more day-to-day decision-making is called HIME-C. Now you may have heard of HIME. It stands for High Impact, Minimal Effort. The idea is to put your focus on the ideas with the biggest impact that are the easiest to implement, like the low-hanging fruit on your list of ideas. This helps you get a win quickly, supposedly, but there are a couple problems with it. First, in my experience as a fusion creative, we tend to underestimate the amount of effort it takes to do something. We also tend to overestimate impact, and that's a normal part of our wiring as optimistic humans. Plus, the less we know about something, the less certain we can be that we're right about the amount of effort or impact that an idea will have. So HIME-C allows you to rate an idea based on three factors: how much effort you think it'll take to implement, how much impact you think it'll have, and then how confident are you in those answers based on your past experience with it. For example, with the publishing incubator, I knew it would be minimal effort to launch, but more effort in the actual work on each book. So I rate that a 6 in terms of effort. I believed that we could help a few authors each year to get their ideas out to an audience that needs them, so I rated the impact closer to an 8 or a 9. But I didn't know that for sure. I didn't have nearly as much confidence on that piece of the equation, since we'd be working mostly with new authors, and my work has been primarily with established authors in the past. So my confidence level around impact was more like 2 or 3. On the other hand, taking creative freedom on the road this season was an easy decision to make. I was very confident I could do it if we got rid of the green screen and the Facebook Lives and went back to a setup more like the early seasons, which we did. I knew the impact wouldn't change much from previous years because we'd already built an audience of fans that continues to grow with each episode that we release. So, with minimal effort, actually less effort than the last season, stable impact, and high confidence, it was easy to keep prioritizing and seeing the results of this show. So some ideas get put on hold while others get more of your time and attention. That's just the nature of being in business. Here's another aspect I want you to consider. As a coach, this comes up for me a lot, and I've seen it happen to my clients and colleagues as well, especially you idea machines out there. Sometimes you're channeling ideas that aren't for you. Not every great idea you have is yours. Sometimes you're the channel and someone you know needs to pick it up and run with it. In her book, Big Magic, Elizabeth Gilbert talks about a book that she started writing and then shelved. Eventually, her friend, Ann Patchett, I think, wrote and released a book that was eerily similar to the one that Gilbert started and never finished. Gilbert remarks that this is a sign that the universe won't wait for you to get off the stick, but I think Gilbert missed the mark on this. I believe this was an idea that came through Gilbert for her friend, and Gilbert just never shared it. When your mind is stuck in scarcity, you will hoard every idea you have, thinking that you're the only one who could possibly move on it for fear of someone stealing your brilliance. Well, think about the toaster project. This project was essentially an effort to reinvent the wheel, or in this case, the toaster, by creating the entire thing from scratch. And by that, I mean Thomas Thwaites tried to source the raw materials, metal to make the steel, springs, and petroleum to make plastic, for example, to build a toaster. He discovered that it would take 9 months of trial and error, attempting to smelt iron in his microwave along the way, to even attempt to replicate the $5 toaster that he bought to study. He tore it apart into over 400 component pieces and tried to create each one of those pieces from scratch. Now, one of the big lessons is that we need the inventions of others to help us innovate. Giving up an idea you can't run with so that someone else can means that someone can innovate on that idea. No one expected there'd ever be an innovation on the incandescent light bulb when it was invented. It was so futuristic. And yet, Edison wasn't the first to play with electric light. He was just the first to create a commercially viable version. In fact, more than 75 years before Edison patented the incandescent light bulb, a dude named Humphrey Davy was, I love saying that, Humphrey Davy, Anyways, Humphrey Davy created the first short-lived electric light by playing around with wires connected to a battery and a piece of carbon. It was almost 40 years later before a British scientist innovated on the idea with a vacuum tube and platinum. But platinum was too expensive to mass produce. Fast forward another 20 years when Joseph Swan figured out a way to do it with inexpensive carbon, and it would still be another 14 years before a Canadian pair of electricians would file the first patent for a light bulb. Nope, wasn't Edison. They eventually sold their patent to Edison, who went on to file the famous patent using carbonized bamboo filament that would burn for 1,200 hours and put him on the map as the quote-unquote inventor of the light bulb. Please. He was just innovating on the ideas that other people had before him. If they hadn't shared their work, we might all still be sitting around reading by candlelight. Your idea is mostly worthless if you can't execute. And once executed, your idea will have a finite lifespan. That's why we get so many ideas. We are evolutionary revolutionaries, we creatives. We innovate on what's come before us, inspired by what was and what could be. So don't begrudge that process. Take advantage of it. Ride that freaking wave until it comes crashing into the shore. And when you know it's not your wave, let it go, because you can't ride them all. You can't ride every idea bus, you guys. You just can't. Every opportunity has an opportunity cost. I mentioned this in a previous episode. Opportunity costs are the things that you have to say no to in order to say yes to something else. If I chose to devote time to writing, I can't use that time for anything else because I'm writing. If I chose to write about a particular topic, then I can't write about something else because I'm writing about that. If I devote time to being with my kids, that means the business stuff has to wait. So there's no use getting upset about it. Every choice has an opportunity cost, every choice, and you're missing out on something by choosing something else. And if you choose to do nothing, well, then that too has an opportunity cost. You can't avoid opportunity costs. They're baked into everything. So use that to your advantage to get crystal clear on what's really important to you. You only have so many hours, so many days, so many dollars. How do you want to invest your resources? And what is the opportunity cost for investing your resources that way? Now, sometimes the most logical answer isn't the one that's best for creative entrepreneurs. If Walt Disney had taken the logical path, he probably never would have built Disneyland. He would have stuck to animation and film. Creatives, however, often see opportunity in taking calculated risks. I said calculated risks. Calculated. Remember, Disney didn't just decide to build Disney World in a swamp like we hear so often. He'd already built Disneyland, so he had a model to innovate on. And Disneyland was developed after he and his Imagineers spent months traveling to other amusement parks around the world to decide what worked well and what didn't and how they could innovate on that. Even the iPod was an innovation because somebody else had created a hard drive that would store music in an MP3 format. It just wasn't fancy. So this is one part art and one part science. You've got to do the work to bring your ideas to fruition, and you're probably going to need to take some risks along the way. So look at the opportunity costs. Decide which ideas are best suited for where you're at now in your business, and then either table the rest or pass them off to people who can run with them. Because that, my friend, is how you get a handle on all the ideas in your brain that are floating around so that you can decide which ones are right for you to pursue. If you need help, you have an open invitation to join us in Accountability Club. A Club is a support group for creative entrepreneurs that's limited in size to make sure your questions get seen and that your voice is heard. If you're not ready to make that investment, then be sure to check out The Rising Tide. It's free. It has a host of useful tools, training, and resources to help you build a profitable, sustainable business doing what you love. You can visit the website to learn more. If you liked this episode and want more episodes in the future, we need your support. Leave a review, share us around, or support our Patreon campaign and get exclusive bonuses only available to our patrons. We're one of the fastest growing shows for creative entrepreneurs because of you. Thank you. And we'd like to do even more. Next time, we're going to tip the idea of epic content on its head. And I'll give you a simple framework to create effective, engaging content for your creative business that I've been using for years. I hope you'll join me. Until then, for more inspiration and education to help you own your dreams without selling your soul, come see what's shaking over at lisarobinyoung.com. You know you want to.